I'm Marty Moss-Cohen. If you're thinking about it, chances are we're talking about it on WHYY's Radio Times.
Support for this public radio podcast comes from A.G. Edwards, caring for nest eggs for more than 120 years with a commitment to provide objective financial advice.
Wayne. Last week, Bob Levy resigned as mayor of Atlantic City after having been AWOL for several weeks. There are questions about whether he falsified his military record when applying for veterans benefits a few years ago, saying he served in the Army Special Forces during the Vietnam War. He's the third Atlantic City mayor to resign in the last three decades. He's also one of many elected officials in New Jersey who have gotten into hot water in the last 5 to 6 years. An estimated 100 government officials and employees have been charged with corruption-related crimes and were either convicted or pled guilty. So why are there so many corruption investigations involving New Jersey politicians? Is this overzealous prosecution a result of stepped-up oversight, a sign that scandal and controversy will become a thing of the past? Is the public outraged, or do they see this as business as usual? Lines open at 1-888-477-9499. Here to answer those questions, we've got two guests, and with us in our Philadelphia studios is George Anastasia. He's a reporter for the Philadelphia Inquirer. He's covering three major corruption investigations stemming from the Atlantic City area. He's covered organized crime extensively for the paper, which led to a number of books, including Blood and Honor. George Anastasia, always a pleasure. Nice to have you back.
Thank you, Marty. Good to be here.
Nice to have you here. And on the telephone is Tom Moran, political columnist for the Newark Star-Ledger. And Tom, always a pleasure. Nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Okay, Marty, nice to talk to you.
Nice to talk to you as well. Well, let's begin with the former mayor of Atlantic City, Bob Levy, and let's begin at the beginning, if we possibly could. I'll turn to you, George. Yeah. When did his trouble start?
I think his trouble started shortly after he was elected. And part of the problem was he lied about his military record, and he had really no need to because he has a commendable record. Two Bronze Stars, he served in Vietnam. But he portrayed himself as a Green Beret, which he wasn't, and ultimately the Atlantic City Press broke that story, and it started to undermine his credibility in the city. On top of which, he was elected in large part because of the support and an alliance with Craig Calloway, who's turned out to be one of the most corrupt councilmen down there. So all of those things kind of came together, and he went AWOL, and now he's gone.
And where did he go when he went AWOL?
He went into a clinic. I mean, and according to his lawyer, he had been over-medicated because of some back problems, and it was prescription medications, and he needed to go into a clinic to kind of, you know, clean himself up. But it wasn't a case of doing anything illegal in that respect. But it's just that he had become depressed. He had the back problems, and then the political stuff was falling all down around his head, and he took off.
And when he resigned last week, what did he say, if anything, about?
He didn't say much of anything. His lawyer issued a statement basically saying that, one, he had had this problem, the physical problem, and two, that the federal government was looking into whether he had enhanced his military record and collected more of a pension than he should have. And then Eddie Jacobs, who's representing a lot of the guys I've written about,
right,
went on to comment that, you know, you don't fool around with the federal government. They've won two wars and they print their own money. So when they're looking at you, you take it seriously.
It's one of the reasons you keep covering New Jersey, right, for quotes like that.
Absolutely.
And who's running Atlantic City today,
well,
then?
Well, Speedy Marsh, who was the city council president, is now the acting mayor. The whole process is mm-hmm. involves the Democratic Party down there and suggesting who would replace him for an interim period, an election in November, and then another election when his term is up a year from now.
And, George, you had a piece in the paper. We'll get to you, Tom, in just a moment or two. You had a piece in the paper on Sunday looking at a number of government officials in Atlantic City who are under a cloud or even in the slammer.
It's the kind of stuff where you can't really make it up. If you looked at what's happened in the last 14 months, and that's what the story was about, all the things that have happened. Three councilmen pled guilty to accepting bribes. Another councilman was taped having sex in a motel with a prostitute. That was a scam set up by one of the councilmen who's now in jail. Another councilman was indicted for that. A fifth councilman was arrested for drunk driving 2:30 in the morning on the beach in a city-issued car. And another councilman, the fellow who's become mayor, is refusing to return $365,000 he won in a settlement that the New Jersey Supreme Court has overturned a suit against the city, and then leave you on AWOL. So, I mean, it's a tick-tock of you can't make this up any more bizarre than it is.
Well, let me turn to you, Tom Moran, as someone who covers New Jersey. Do you think there's something unusual about Atlantic City?
I think I want to go down and start covering Atlantic City. Sounds like those people know how to party.
You got that right, Tom.
Well, you know, it is that Atlantic City seems like an extreme case, and but it is something in the water all over this state. I don't quite understand it, but the shamelessness of it is pretty remarkable. Mm-hmm. I'm constantly slapping my forehead.
And I was reading some of the things that the U.S. Attorney Christopher Christie has, and he's been indicting a lot of these people. One of the things that he said about New Jersey, and Tom, I'd be interested in your comment about this. I think he was being serious. He said there's just too much government in New Jersey. He talked about 566 municipalities, 612 school boards, 21 county governments, the $34.5 billion state government, that when you have so much government, you've just got so much temptation.
Yeah, you know, and he's not the only one to make that point. Corruption fighters going way back, federal prosecutors and state attorney generals make the same point. There are just so many more pots of money for them to guard and watch. I mean, I would say it still seems that may be sort of is the structure that allows this to happen more easily, but why are so many people putting their paws in those pots of money?
Well,
it's a mystery to me.
I mean, it raises questions about oversight, which is, I mean, who's supposed to be guarding all this money? I'll turn to you, George.
Well, I mean, I think that's part of it. I think home rule is a big issue in New Jersey, and everybody wraps that flag around themselves, and they don't want to give up any of their power. The other interesting thing to me, and especially when we're talking in terms of Atlantic City and some of the other poor cities in New Jersey, and what I've seen, it's almost sociological. Atlantic City systemically has been corrupt. You go back to Hap Farley, Nookie Johnson, Stumpy Armin, the pre-casino days when there were casinos, illegal casinos. There's always been a corruption in the city. And I think what's happened in Atlantic City, you could probably make the argument in Camden as well and some other cities, is minority groups have now risen to power. They've taken control. And instead of coming in and saying, we're for good government, basically they're saying, now it's our turn. It's almost human nature. The system has always been created that way, and they're coming in and saying, now it's our turn to get a piece of this pie.
So you're saying that, looking at Atlantic City, it's not that there's now legalized gambling in the city that's created this problem.
No.
You're saying it's been there, I guess, underground.
Always has been
in
there.
The past.
I think casino gambling has simply made the pot bigger, but it hasn't changed the way anybody operates down there.
Hmm.
It's very bizarre. I mean, one of the story I did that you talked about, I hypothetically, if Atlantic City was one gigantic casino, City Hall would be where the nickel slot machine parlors are. It's so they sell their offices for such cheap amount of money, $500, $1,000. It's not very sophisticated. It's just put your hand out and let's make a deal kind of thing.
You know, it's similar up here. A lot of the cases seem like small change. They're $3,000 or $5,000,
right, yeah,
in an envelope passed to a councilman to get a contract, which at first glance doesn't make any sense until you think this is a lifestyle for them. I mean, remember when they had arrested Hudson County Executive Januszewski? They went to his house and they found a file cabinet in his house stuffed with envelopes full of $5,000. So it begins to add up.
And one $5,000 envelope after another. And what does someone get paid in New Jersey to be a member of the assembly, the legislature, Tom?
$49,000.
And a councilman in Atlantic City, I think we're being paid $30,000. So
a council person in Newark makes much more, something like $70,000 or $80,000.
Yeah.
Does that explain it? I mean, do you think they're underpaid in the state, Tom?
No, Newark City Council is well paid, and they've had just as much corruption. They've had council members go to jail. One of the recent arrests was the chief of staff to the City Council President, Mildred Crump.
Wow.
So it doesn't seem that just it gives them, you know, that just gives them more money.
Well, George, you brought in a quote from F. Scott Fitzgerald.
Yeah.
I was wondering if you could share that with the class today.
I looked this up because I knew I was coming in here. This is from a short story written in 1923. And the opening line was, parts of New Jersey, as you know, are underwater, and other parts are under continual surveillance by the authorities. That's 84 years ago. Nothing has changed, I think.
You know, can I add something, Mark?
Please do, Tom.
In Newark, it's up here, it's the exact same as George is describing down in Atlantic City. There was even more horrendous corruption under Hugh Adonisio,
right,
the mayor who ran before the riots, who ran the city.
Mm.
And I think, George, you might know this better than me, but I think it was about 1970, Life magazine ran a cover story about how the mob basically ran governments in New Jersey.
Yes, sure.
And it's an interesting historical perspective because as bad as it is now, it's not that bad.
Huh.
That, at that point, that's when they first got serious about it and brought in the federal prosecutors from Washington, Herb Stern and Fred Lacey, and they really began to crack down on the mob. And if I, again, George, you'd know this better than me, but I understand that they have largely been successful with that, even with the casinos, correct?
Absolutely, yeah. I think in terms of mob control, mob influence in New Jersey, it's a fraction of what it was back in those days, absolutely.
But the fact that something like 100 public officials in New Jersey have been indicted, most of them found guilty of something, do you see that as a sign of progress? I'll put that first to you, Tom Moran.
Well, I see as I say, it seems odd, but it is better than it used to be. And I would say, if it weren't for the fact that the feds were beating these people over the head we'd be in a much worse situation. It's worth asking why the state isn't also going after these people. I notice in the Pleasantville case down there, the mayor of Pleasantville went first to the state attorney general and said, hey, something fishy is going on here. Hmm. And the state attorney general didn't prosecute it. It fell to the feds later on, and they're bringing the case in. And Chris Christie's attitude from the beginning has been, come on in, the water's fine, there's plenty of fish in here, more than I can handle. He wants help from the state, and he's not getting it.
And why do you think he's not getting it, George?
I think part of it is political. I think, I mean, you know, if you look at what the attorney general's office has and has not done, the record is slim. And they'll tell you it's resources that's telling them not have the manpower, but I think a large degree it's politics.
Are we talking, though, that the people that are under a cloud, are they Democrats, Republicans? Is it a mixed bag?
You know, it's the power brokers. That's another thing. There was an investigation several years ago involving a couple politicians who were trying to rig a contract for the state lottery, and there was a conversation with a lobbyist, and they were talking about who's an R and who's a D and what we can do. And the lobbyist said, you don't understand, they're all part of the green team. I mean, at a certain level in this state and probably everywhere, it's not about R's and D's, it's about money. And one of the things that I think we're seeing, even with these investigations, is, and maybe Tom would agree or disagree, is it's not getting to the level where the serious money is and where the serious players are.
These are the more kind of on-the-street players?
So start talking about
Levy, good example?
Levy, Atlantic City has been low-hanging fruit. If you want to start talking about the lawyers, the lobbyists, and the bankers, and you start talking about serious money, and none of these investigations are going there.
You want to speak to that, Tom?
Well, I think that's true a lot of the cases. I would say that the prosecution of John Lynch, who was sort of the lord of darkness in Middlesex County and ruled that county for a long time on behalf of Democrats, he's in jail now. That was a big one. I would say that the prosecution of Sharp James and Wayne Bryant are big ones. So I think they're getting closer to sort of center of power.
Yeah.
And John Lynch, for folks down in the southern part of New Jersey, explain, Tom, who he was, is.
He was the Senate president at one point. He was also the mayor of New Brunswick. And the tragedy is he was an incredibly talented politician who really did help turn New Brunswick around. Then he got to the Senate, was state Senate president, was considered a gubernatorial material at one point, wound up being sort of the power behind the throne when McGreevy was governor, and later left the Senate, was still exerting a lot of power, was constantly seen in McGreevy's administration in the inner circle, but got greedy and wound up, you know, having a separate private business in which he used his muscle to advocate on behalf of people and get people who he had put in power, various governors, to give approvals for various projects, and got nailed.
39 months sentence for tax evasion and mail fraud.
I think that's what it is, Marty, but you...
I probably read one of your articles, Tom. I'm probably quoting you back to you.
I'm supposed to remember stuff I write.
And one little quote, we're up in a break here, that Lynch said about McGreevy. And this is quickly to you, Tom. The worst 34 months in my political life.
Yeah, he wound up having a break with McGreevy basically because McGreevy was disobedient, and I guess he hadn't anticipated that.
That's Tom Moran, political columnist for the Newark Star-Ledger. Also with us, George Anastasia, reporter for the Philadelphia Inquirer. Both of them cover the state of New Jersey, and the state has been up to its eyeballs in crime allegations, and many public officials are either in prison or facing prison time, and we're talking with both of them about what it is about New Jersey. And we do want to hear from our New Jersey listeners. Why do you think there's so much corruption in your state, and do you care? Lines open at 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
The University of Pennsylvania Health System supports WHYY. Penn has a team of cancer specialists at the Abramson Cancer Center comprised of surgeons, therapists, and researchers. They are all dedicated to advancing the diagnosis, treatment, and prevention of cancer, and creating surgical techniques to help treat it. More information about the Abramson Cancer Center at the University of Pennsylvania Health System can be found online at www.pennhealth.com.
We have a special challenge from the Independence Foundation during this membership drive. They want 800 listeners to Radio Times to become members. And if that happens by Friday night, they will give WHYY an additional $10,000. Make a phone call right now at 1-888-345-9499 so we can meet this challenge from the Independence Foundation. That's 1-888-345-WHYY. And you can also pledge online at WHYY.org. Make a call, make it count, and we'll make this special challenge from the Independence Foundation. Thanks.
U.S. Artists American Fine Art Show supports WHYY. From October 19th through 21st, more than 5,000 paintings, sculptures, and works on paper from 55 exhibitors will be on display and for purchase at the 33rd Street Armory. Produced by the Women's Board and presented by Pitcairn, U.S. Artists benefits the Pennsylvania Academy of the Fine Arts. Tickets at www.usartists.org.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen. And if you're just joining us, we're talking about why there are so many corruption investigations involving New Jersey politicians. Tom Moran joining us by telephone, political columnist for the Newark Star-Ledger. George Anastasia, a reporter for the Philadelphia Inquirer. And we've got calls coming into 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. Same questions to you, our listeners. Let me get Jeff from Haddon Heights to join us. Hi, Jeff. Go ahead. Your Radio Times.
Yes. Back in 2002, when they pretty much everybody in state government ignored state election law to get Lautenberg on the ballot, I kind of saw that basically New Jersey voters are kind of compliant with corruption. And it's that people, we're living in a state that kind of tries to meddle into a lot of business. And people are just okay with that. If they're not okay with that, they're just apathetic about it, and they're not really doing much about anything.
Or they don't even know that it's going on. Let me get a reaction from you, George Anastasia.
No, I think I think part of it is, especially down here, if you're looking at Camden County, Atlantic County, those kind of places, the political machine is so strong that I think a lot of people feel they can't have an impact on what's going on. You know, an independent candidate doesn't have a shot. So I think that feeds into all this, and people kind of just throw up their hands and say, what's the difference?
And when you talk about a machine in southern part of New Jersey, what are we talking
about?
Well,
I think in Camden County, into Gloucester County, and now down into Atlantic County, there's a Democrat organization that's fairly powerful. And for a long time in Atlantic County, there was a Republican organization that's somewhat on the wane right now. But that's the clash that's going on. But I think the everyday voter, the everyday resident just says, I can't get into this. I can't be a part of it. I can't have any kind of effect on what's going on, so why bother?
Because the system is stacked against me. Tom, your thoughts?
Well, we ran a poll that said people are very concerned about it, and they primarily blame Democrats over Republicans, but that they're still planning to vote Democrat, the majority.
So
I think other issues are considered more important, even though people are worried about this.
I mean, talk about a little psychological portrait, I guess, of New Jersey voters, that they don't like it, but they're not going to change their party affiliation.
Yeah, and you see some people lose on the basis of ethics, but it's pretty rare. I mean, Senator John Bennett, who is a high-ranking Republican, lost to Senator Alan Carter, a Democrat, 4 years ago, I guess, based on all kinds of ethical allegations against him. He wasn't charged with a crime. But we're seeing, like, Mims Hackett is one of the assemblymen rounded up in this latest corruption probe.
Right.
You know, on tape, taking money kind of evidence in this case. They say very strong stuff. He stepped down from the assembly, but he kept his position as mayor of Orange and says he's running for re-election in May.
Wow.
So I guess he perceives that people really won't mind that much.
Has he got a shot to win?
I don't know. Too early to tell.
Yeah.
Jeff, thanks for the call. Let me get Bill from Radnor to join us. Hi, Bill. Go ahead. Your Radio Times.
I know you're primarily talking about New Jersey, but I sense you're talking corruption in government. And I wonder, Mr. Anastasia, why you people leave the suburban areas alone? Maybe that's the reason why you have more Democrats than Republicans. I mean, you have like a Montgomery County where you have the head of the Montgomery County Republican Party who's a felon. He was in jail, he was a convicted felon, and there's so much corruption in the suburban area, and for some reason, I'm not being sarcastic, but maybe they don't have enough nicknames, Mr. Anastasia. What do you think?
Bill, thanks for the call. Go ahead, George.
I know he likes nicknames, but
he likes lots of things, I think. But go ahead, George.
I think suburban politics does not get the kind of attention that city and statewide politics gets. And part of it is a question of resources. And we just don't have the wherewithal to cover all of this kind of. And I think it's easier with the kind of corruption we're talking about in some of these places is the white collar corruption that becomes part and parcel of the process, and it's much more difficult to ferret out, and in a lot of ways much more sophisticated than a councilman taking an envelope, and so it requires resources and time, and that's one of the reasons it doesn't get done.
I wonder, Tom, if you could talk a bit about Newark. The former mayor Sharp James is under a cloud. There is a new sheriff in town, so to speak, Cory Booker. Do you see that this could be a time of change for the city of Newark and New Jersey?
Oh, yeah, decidedly. I mean, the contrast there is gigantic. I mean, Sharp is beyond in trouble. He's under indictment. Last time I saw him, he was in leg irons and handcuffs.
Okay, fair enough.
A sight for sore eyes. But he hasn't been convicted. He's awaiting trial. I mean, Cory Booker came in and passed basically the whole menu of ethics reforms that Common Cause has been pushing, a ban on political donations from any city employees, a ban on donations from contractors going forward. And, you know, it's the change in atmosphere is quite stark.
And how did Sharp James end up in leg irons?
He was accused of two things. One was using a city credit card for lavish trips to places like Rio and five-star hotels with female companions. The second was, keep in mind, too, one of the credit cards he uses from the police department. This is a time when kids are getting shot down and the police need more. You know, there were holes in the roofs of the police precincts and they're using old typewriters. So it's just unbelievable.
That is unbelievable.
The other thing he's accused of is doing is actually more serious, which is selling city-owned land to his friends at below market rates. And one of the women he sold one of these lots to is also indicted along with him, and is one of his female companions.
Well, and I think underscores what you both have said is in certain ways how petty some of these crimes or allegations are, but also how brazen. I mean, to use a credit card, I guess you're assuming, or he would be assuming, that no one was going to check on this.
Yeah, and they didn't until Cory Booker came in and said, hey, wait a minute, looked at the bills. Mm-hmm.
Interesting. George, I know you're covering a couple of other cases. You mentioned them earlier, coming out of the Atlantic City
right,
area.
There's Operation Steel Pier, which focused on the Atlantic City Council, and three councilmen have pled guilty to that already, and some political expediters and a few other folks. And then there's the investigation that Tom mentioned, Operation Broken Boards, which right. started at the Pleasantville Board of Education and has kind of spread throughout the state. And it's a question of people basically cash for contracts. You know, you give me this and I'll make sure that your insurance company gets this contract. Mm-hmm. The FBI set up a sting. They created a phony insurance company, and they had two cooperators who were posing as businessmen, and they went around making deals in Pleasantville, and then the Pleasantville folks said, hey, why don't you talk to my friend up here in Orange? Why don't you talk to my friend up here in Essex County? And it just kind of spread. And Christie said it was they got on the train. And they were just going all over the state, the corruption train all over New Jersey. And it went beyond New Jersey eventually.
We began by talking about Bob Levy, the former right. mayor of Atlantic City. And I have to say, reading some articles in the Philadelphia Inquirer, your paper, George, about him, I mean, he has a really compelling story. In many ways, he was a lifeguard in Atlantic City.
Right. He was a career military guy. He was the captain of the lifeguards. He was the emergency management individual in Atlantic City. And a lot of people say, in fact, Amy Rosenberg had the story Sunday, that he probably should have never left the beach. Mm. That's where he was most comfortable, most happy. He got involved, as I said, running with Callaway, running for Callaway, and that kind of created a whole situation that's spun out of control for him.
And you see Callaway as a kingmaker down there?
Callaway was a kingmaker. Callaway's in jail right now doing 40 months. But, yeah, he was a kingmaker. He was an operative. He was a street hustler in a lot of ways. And the irony of the Callaway situation was, on one hand, he was cooperating with the FBI and wearing a wire in a sting operation, and at the same time got caught in another sting operation where someone else was wearing a wire, and he was, on one hand, taking money illegally with the FBI's consent to nab bad guys, and then was also taking money illegally from another sting operator and ended up getting jammed up. As I said, you need a chart, and you can't make this up any more bizarre than it is.
Well, you know, I'm curious, George, because you've written so much about the mob in the Philadelphia, New Jersey area. Do you see, I mean, are these similar stories to the kind of mob stories that you wrote?
Well, I mean, this is similar to the waning days of the mob when it was the gang that couldn't shoot straight. It's not the sophisticated kind of mob we used to see, nor is it the sophisticated kind of corruption we used to see. So is that indicative of things are getting better or things are getting worse? I don't know.
Yeah. Do you think better or worse, Tom?
Hard to say. Since I've been watching, I'd say the last 10 years, it seems like a pretty consistent drumbeat. My point earlier was that compared to the 1970s, it's gotten better.
I agree. Yeah. And both of you have referred to this sort of north-south in New Jersey. Is there an actual kind of divide in the state, or it just operates as two regions that have been knitted together as a state, Tom?
There is a divide politically. They're always debating over, you know, for example, if you have a Speaker of the Assembly from the South, you wouldn't have a Senate President from the South as well, and vice versa. So, you know, there's always a little bargaining to do. I mean, the South generally, and again, Georgia knows this better than me, but they feel like the ignored stepchild, and that's one of George Norcross's main reasons. He says he's pushed so hard to get power in that machine. But there, generally, people talk about the six southernmost counties that have about a quarter of the state's population, and so the bulk of most of the statewide office people come from the north, where there are more votes to begin with.
And that's Tom Moran, political columnist for the Newark Star-Ledger. Also with us, George Anastasia, reporter for the Philadelphia Inquirer. And both of them cover the state of New Jersey. And we're looking for answers to the question, why are there so many corruption investigations involving New Jersey politicians? And the U.S. Attorney, Christopher Christie, has been arresting people left and right and has talked about the culture, the disease of public corruption in the state of New Jersey. A couple open lines at 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. Let me get Michelle from Middlesex County to join us. Hi, Michelle. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
I think the most succinct thing that needs to be said is that it really doesn't matter if you're a D or an R. I think it's people in power. I mean, and they've been there too long in most cases. I'm proud to say I'm a liberal Democrat, but unfortunately, just in Middlesex County, we've had a generation, 30 years of the same people in the freeholders, and in my particular town, 20 years of the same people on the board, and they're just making the rules. And if you want anything done, you have to pay homage to the same people. And there's another issue: incumbents. You know, they handpick machine loyalists who vacated positions. And then they run them as incumbents, and they've really never previously been elected. And the third thing I'd like to point out is primary races. They're rarely contested because people are terrified to go up against either of the machines. So I'm not, you know, singling out one party or another. I think it's just the problem of power and the problem of even races going to people's spouses, or, you know, if someone vacates. I think there's a couple in New Jersey recently, Democrats even, that the father passed away, I believe, and the gentleman's son took over. And we see that all the time. I think it's a real problem in a democracy.
Well, Michelle, I appreciate the call to Radio Times. Let me give, I'll toss this first to you, Tom Moran. And she described the sort of culture of power and incumbency in New Jersey.
I think that's absolutely insightful and correct. It's unbelievable. I mean, I live in New Jersey, and most people I deal with are decent people. Why is it when you turn to politics, you get such sleazebags? And I think they have to get into the game. You have to go through and kiss the ring of these regional bosses too often. And, you know, you have to raise money according to Jersey rules, which means you go get all the lawyers and the engineers who have contracts with the local government, and you hit them up for money. The unspoken, I suppose, at least unrecorded, implication is if you don't give us money, you're going to lose the contract. You see, one party, where it's especially blatant is Bergen County, where Democrats took over in like 2002. They fired all the lawyers and gave all the legal business to Democratic law firms. Mm-hmm. Then you look at the donations, it's all from the Democrats. So, you know, there's a big debate now going on among Democrats who say, look, these people who arrested on corruption charges broke the rules. No matter how many reform rules we pass, there are going to be people who break them, and that's true. But I wonder if you just reform the whole process and not make it such a sleazy affair. I mean, you deal with these people very often, you feel like taking a hot shower afterwards. And I don't think good people are attracted to that. I mean, miraculously, you do get a good number of very good people who manage to either fight their way through or somehow get through those machines and achieve a position of power. I mean, Middlesex County, Joe Vitale, Bergen County, Loretta Weinberg, the senator, is engaged in basically a civil war with the machine up there.
But I'm always disturbed, George, when you hear about uncontested primaries, when the incumbent just, you know, marches back into their job.
That's the rule rather than the exception. I think Tom would know better than I, but it doesn't seem to be that many contested primaries in the state. And it goes back to what the caller, the mm-hmm. point that she made, is nobody wants to buck the machine. Nobody has the resources to buck the machine. And that all feeds into there's not a reform-minded electorate, I don't think.
But are there, I mean, it sounds like you're both saying there are rules in New Jersey about what you can and can't do. You're both looking at me like I'm out of my mind. But what, they're not enforced, no one cares?
No, I mean, the point Tom just made is, I think, the right on the mark. I mean, it's all about money and how do you finance a campaign, and the only way to do that is to be part of the machine, because there's this quid pro quo. You know, we're going to get in, and then your law firm's going to get this contract, or this engineering firm's going to get that. It's just the way the system is set up. As an independent, what do you have to offer when you come in there to the people who are going to give you money to run your campaign?
But do you think that's really unusual? I mean, we've done so many programs about Pennsylvania, for instance, and the discussion is about the entrenched power structure.
I think it's similar,
within Harrisburg.
I don't think it's any different than Pennsylvania. I mean, it's New Jersey has this rep because we're New Jersey. And I'm a Jersey guy like Tom. I've lived here for almost all my life. We have this reputation. But I mean, when I look at Pennsylvania, it's no more or less corrupt than Jersey.
And how about at the north end of the state, Tom, as you look in New York, does it seem that much different?
It does seem worse to me. I once talked to Chris Christie, the U.S. attorney here, of course. He was at a national convention of U.S. attorneys in Arizona, and he said the shop talk among the U.S. attorneys was that Chicago, New Orleans, and New Jersey were the three most corrupt jurisdictions. I mean, obviously, it's unscientific, and it's hard to know how to measure this stuff. You can't go by the number of indictments, and there's no real objective way to tell that. But I think that's fair to say their judgment carries some weight.
But we're talking about long history here, because I think if you asked that question 50 years ago, you probably would get the same answer, Tom. Chicago, New Orleans, New Jersey.
I think, as George was saying, there is a legacy of this, and there is a sense that, hey, it's my turn now, you know.
What about John Corzine, the governor? I mean, how is he viewed in the state, Tom? I'll put that first to you.
Well-intentioned but ineffective, I think, is a growing perception of him. I mean, he wants to do the right thing. He talks about, for example, changing the rules so that you can't do this. We give the pay-to-play system I described earlier where you win power and you give all the contracts to your friends. But he hasn't fought hard enough in the legislature to actually get it done. All his reforms have been way watered down, and he seems to consider that half victory is enough. And it's there's increasing frustration, I'd say.
And I think Tom made the point earlier, too. I mean, I haven't seen Corzine say to the AG's office, let's get into this game, let's go do something about it. I mean, that's the arm that he has, but he's not using it.
And why do you think he isn't, George?
I think it comes back to politics. I mean, he's satisfied to have half the loaf and not upset the powers that be. If you look at these investigations down in the South, now in the North, Tom's right, there's been some significant indictments. But if you look at the investigations down here in the South, they've never gone past the low-hanging fruit. In Atlantic County, there's a theory that if they kept pursuing the Steel Pier operation, they'd end up getting some fairly significant attorneys, power brokers, and maybe even statewide elected officials.
You know, I look at some of the attorney generals they have, though, like Stu Ravner and now Ann Milgram, and it's hard for me to believe that they're deliberately not pursuing criminal cases for political reasons. I wonder if more of it is just that you know, if you start as an attorney for the state, you make $20,000 less than if you start for the feds. Also, by this point, the feds have the reputation of being effective, so that they get a lot more of the tips than the state does.
Would you say that about
it? Might be other sort of institutional reasons as well.
Would you say that about Peter Harvey as well?
No, I wouldn't.
Okay.
Okay, and for our listeners and myself, who's Peter Harvey?
He's a former attorney general who basically built a career around prosecutions that he had conducted, but again and again there was criticism that Harvey pulled his punches and didn't go after the people who were behind the scenes and making all the decisions that really mattered in this kind of corruption situation.
But you're saying kind of called off the dogs?
Yeah, there's a couple cases specifically that we wrote about that the AG didn't. It's one of those things where you don't ask the question because you don't want to know the answer.
Right.
You know, and that's a way to conduct an investigation. You don't want to go in a certain area because you're afraid where it's going to take you.
It's very difficult to prove that thing, but it is true that some of Peter's deputies would get on the phone and call and say, look, he's pulling his punches. Peter would, of course, deny that.
Yeah, absolutely.
But obviously, cases like this, if you're talking about high-level officials, involves a fair amount of time and money.
Absolutely.
Looking at you, George.
I mean, absolutely.
A thorough investigation is going to be costly.
It's a question of resources. It's a question of having the time to do it. It's a question of creating the wiretap situation that you're going to need. I mean, all of this stuff is a conspiracy, and the only way you break a conspiracy, you see it in the mob investigations as well. It's either with electronic surveillance or with a conspirator who's going to give up the information. That's the only two ways to break something like this.
It
takes a lot of time, a lot of effort.
And that's George Anastasia, who joins us along with Tom Moran. We're talking about New Jersey and the number of corruption investigations involving New Jersey politicians. George Anastasia, reporter for the Philadelphia Inquirer. He's covering three major corruption investigations stemming from the Atlantic City area. He and he covered organized crime for the paper. Tom Moran, political columnist for the Newark Star-Ledger, 1-888-477-9499. We'll be right back.
Support for WHYY is provided by Rutgers Camden, celebrating the 20th anniversary of its nationally accredited Master of Public Policy and Administration program. On Thursday, October 18th, Rutgers Camden will host the Richard C. Goodwin Lecture in honor of Ethel Lawrence, titled Saving Our Cities, Imperative or Impossibility. Details for the Goodwin Lecture on Thursday, October 18th are available online at camden.rutgers.edu.
It's the fourth day of the seven-day membership drive here at WHYY, and I want you to make this phone call right now at 1-888-345-9499 and make your pledge of support to programs like Radio Times here at WHYY. If we hear from 800 listeners by Friday night, the Independence Foundation will give WHYY an additional $10,000. We don't want that to slip through our fingers. Make a call right now at 1-888-345-9499, 1-888-345-WHYY. Also, you can pledge online at our secure server at WHYY.org. Thanks.
McCarter Theater Center proudly supports WHYY and presents Tartuffe through October 28th. One of Molière's well-known plays, Tartuffe spins hypocrisy into comedy, complete with a surprising anti-hero and equally surprising twists and turns. Located in Princeton, New Jersey, McCarter Theater presents over 250 performing arts events annually. For more information, 609-258-ARTS or on the web at McCarter.org.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen. Talking about the many corruption investigations involving New Jersey politicians, is the state that corrupt, or are these investigations as a result of stepped-up oversight? We're talking with Tom Moran and George Anastasia, and we've got June from Camden joining us this morning on Radio Times. Hi, June. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I disagree with one of your callers. I mean, one of your guests said that we these people are corrupt, yet we keep voting for these same people and for these same individuals to get in. But I disagree with that. I don't. I live over here in Camden, and I tell you, these Camden County Democrats are so corrupt, they make my skin crawl.
And June,
there is no way I would vote for any of them. I vote Republican in local elections. No, I'm a Democrat. I'm a lifelong Democrat. But in these local elections, these county and city county elections, I vote Republican because these Democrats are so thoroughly corrupt and under the guidance of the king corrupter, George Norcross. I mean, not only is he corrupted, he's so slippery they can't even get him.
Well, June, interesting call from you, and George is having a physical reaction to some of what you're saying.
I think there are a lot of people who feel that way, but if you look at the numbers, the Democrat machine always turns out the vote, and they always get reelected. So there aren't enough people who are that upset
like
to change the system.
Well,
exactly.
I am.
Well, you are. And do you feel, let me ask you, Jim, because then I want to turn to Tom, that when you vote Republican, that I guess they lose, so you don't know whether they would have been better or not, right?
I know it's fruitless, you know. I know that they're not going to win, but I just cannot pull the lever for these people.
I hear you.
I just can't do it.
I hear you. Let me get Tom Moran to respond to your comments. Not enough Junes, I guess, in New Jersey. Tom.
Yeah. Look at Wayne Bryan. He usually won with 80-85% of the vote in Camden. He held, even before he was indicted, he held four public jobs besides being a private lawyer. You know, in the Senate, he had a UMDNJ and Rutgers and the Board of Social Service. Everybody knew what was going on. It was obvious that he was using his public position to enrich himself and his family. Everybody in his family had a public job, you know, going down to fourth cousins. And, you know, people kept electing him by overwhelming margins. So I worry, you know, that people don't care enough.
I wonder about even voter turnout in places like that. When you've got a voter turnout of, let's say, 20 or 25%, most people don't vote, then a very small group of people can keep reelecting somebody, Tom.
Right.
I mean, do you say that's part of the problem? Is that you just people don't care about elections? I think this is a national problem. Don't care about elections anyway.
Yes, and that gives sort of the special interests or the in-club enhanced power.
You're nodding your head, George.
No, I mean, that's interesting. The in-club is, I think, the key phrase. And one of the interesting things as the Bryant case unravels is, are the feds going to be able to use Bryant to take this to the next level? I mean, are they going to be able to squeeze him? Is he going to cooperate at some point down the line? I don't know the answers to those, but those are the kind of things you're looking at, because here's a guy, Bryant, who certainly, no pun intended, knows where the bodies are buried. I mean, he's been part of that machine forever, and if he ever decided that he wanted to give it up, it would be interesting to see where the feds could go with that.
And that's the kind of pressure, I guess, the feds do in these kinds of investigations?
Although, no sign yet. I mean, he's coming out fighting. He's
exactly.
asked for a hearing to accuse Chris Christie of engaging in selective political prosecution to further his ambitions to run for governor.
Yeah, that's always part of the debate now, is Christie's basically zeroed in on Democrats, and is, you know, he wants to run for governor, and he's going to run on that kind of platform. And that's one of the reasons why the Atlantic County investigation is interesting, because if you take it to the next level, you're going to be dealing with Republicans down there, and some people are saying Christie doesn't want to go there. I mean, that's part of this whole argument. Everything is politics. Don't you agree, Tom, in New Jersey, everything
is
politics?
Well, you know, I don't buy the argument against Christie. I mean, let's assume he was just... take the Machiavellian view that he is trying to prepare a run for governor. The smartest thing he could do is be arrest some other Republicans to prove his credentials as a as an unbiased prosecutor. I think the reason you get more Democrats is because they have all the power. Why would you want to bribe a Republican in New Jersey? They can't give you a contract. Yeah.
But you're saying, George, in Atlantic City...
In the Atlantic County, yeah. There's a different kind of dynamic. And, you know, I mean, so much of it is Machiavellian. And I'm not saying this is why Christie's doing what he's doing, but I know that's part of the buzz out there is putting this in political terms.
June, thanks for the call. We've got Ed now from Princeton joining us this morning on Radio Times. Hi, Ed. Go ahead. You're on the air.
I think Tom has created a misimpression about the 1970s. I was involved in law enforcement back at the time, and the state did respond by creating the first state grand jury in the country, electronic surveillance authorization, and ultimately the Division of Criminal Justice. And back at that time, between the early 1970s and the early 80s, literally hundreds of major racketeers and public officials were prosecuted for corruption at the state level. Unfortunately, that effort deteriorated in the last several administrations. Very little has been done. But that doesn't mean it can't be done by the state. And I think that the early 1970s demonstrated that if the resources and the will are there, the state can be very effective.
Well, I appreciate your call, Ed, and I'd be interested what Tom Moran has to say in response. Tom?
He's absolutely right. That sounds like Ed Steer, who's one of the heroes of this story, who used to run the Division of Criminal Justice in the state, and at that time the state was shoulder to shoulder with the feds. He's right. They backed off.
And are you indeed Ed Steer?
Yes.
They can't fool Tom. You can't fool Tom.
But Ed, just picking up on what you just said, I mean, do you think there is the same kind of atmosphere in New Jersey to begin to address these problems on the state level?
I have been hoping for years, as Tom knows, that the state would resurrect that effort. And I think that there is an opportunity in this administration. I think Ann Milgram is sincere about it. But it takes time to put the pieces together. As Tom correctly pointed out, the people who have information now believe that the only place to take that information is the FBI or the U.S. Attorney's Office.
Right, not to the state.
There's got to be change. And it's going to take time to do that. But the state has certain advantages over the federal government in investigating corruption. They're closer to the problem. There's more information that comes to the surface through the Department of Community Affairs and other cabinet agencies. And so with proper reorganization and some additional effort, I think it's possible for the state to get back on track.
Well, I appreciate your call to Radio Times. Ed, let me just give our guests a chance to respond. I'm looking at you, George. I mean, he's seeing, obviously underscoring what some of both of you have said, but he said the state officials are closer to the ground and attorneys
for
can...
Sure. I mean, I think if they set their mind to do it, they're in the better position to be effective. Mm-hmm. What I think both Tom and I are saying is in the past 15 years, they haven't had the mindset. And part of what I'm saying is part of the reason they don't have the mindset is the political power from the machines that elect the governor have influence in terms of what's going to be on the agenda.
Tom, you want to add to that?
No.
No. Well, let me ask you something then, and this is back to you, Tom Moran. I read that something like 26 state legislators are not running for office, and there could be something like a 20% turnover in the New Jersey legislature. First of all, is that correct, as you understand it, and do you think that's significant?
I think those numbers are correct. It's significant for a couple of reasons. That we're finally going to have a decent share of women in the legislature, it looks like, unless there are giant surprises. New Jersey's always been way low in the rankings on that, down there with, like, Mississippi. And I think that's the same problem. It's these boys' clubs that control politics, and it's hard to break in. But whether it will make a difference on the corruption thing, I'm not so sure, because they are still, most of them, products of this same machine. Mm-hmm. I think the key question is whether Corzine really puts his shoulder into it or not. He says he will after the election, but there are reasons to be a little skeptical about that. He hasn't, in the past, he hasn't really even pushed hard on pay-to-play reform. That's the awarding of contracts to your political donors. And Republicans wanted him to hold a special session on ethics after these 11 arrests. After that case, the level of disgust was so high, they wanted him to hold a special session and said, during an election is the best time to do this because it will put pressure on Democratic candidates to line up on with the pro-reform agenda. But Corzine didn't want to do that. He didn't want to make a fuss. They're trying to avoid talking about any issues because they know they'll win.
And are women seen as different because they've just been outsiders to this system, Tom?
Yeah, I don't know that on the whole they would be any better on ethics. We'll see. I mean, Alan Karcher, it's fair to say, is running for re-election in one of the few contested races in Monmouth County, has been very forthright on this. She's the one, as I mentioned earlier, who beat John Bennett. She ran on an ethics campaign. So she should be, you can expect her, for example, as a woman, to push pretty hard for this. Loretta Weinberg, another senator from Bergen County, one of the leading voices for reform.
You want anything to that, George?
No. I think what you need in the whole process is new voices and new people. And if this is the way to do it, fine.
All right.
But I think Tom makes the point. If they're coming out of the machine, how independent are they going to be?
And that's George Anastasia, reporter for the Philadelphia Inquirer, Tom Moran, political columnist for the Newark Star-Ledger, talking about New Jersey, the many corruption investigations, and taking phone calls here on Radio Times at 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. Let me get Kendall from Allentown to join us. Hi, Kendall. Go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hi. Thank you very much for your call.
Sure.
My original question... Thanks for taking my call.
You're welcome.
My original question was about what kind of coercion and pressure happens when someone goes into politics to become a public servant and make things better for their constituents, and then they sort of morph into these greedy monsters. But it sounds like to me that many, and you're making it sound like the majority.
Whoops, I think we lost Kendall.
Sorry, somebody just tried to get in.
Okay.
The majority of people are actually going into politics because they see New Jersey as the goose laying the golden egg, the perpetual golden egg. Is that so?
Well, Kendall, I'll let you go get that phone call. Let me get George Anastasia to respond to that. I mean, what is it?
That's a fundamental question. What motivates somebody to go into politics and why are they there? And I think what we're talking about today is a lot of people go in because they're part of the political machine, and the political machine is about pay to play and about taking care of your friends, and that's the motivation. It's not about good government.
Tom, your thoughts?
It still amazes me how many good people manage to navigate their way through this and really have the state's best interest at heart. I think, we don't write as many stories about that as we should probably.
But it is unfortunate.
It's kind of corny, but I don't think the majority are corrupt.
But it's unfortunate, Tom, wouldn't you agree, that they have to navigate through this? I mean, that's part of what the process is.
Right. They get nothing but grief.
Yeah, exactly.
But is it corny that people are not corrupt, Tom?
No, I mean, it is funny because when I write about corruption, I sometimes get emails from people who say they're all a bunch of bums. We need to just vote against every incumbent and stuff like this, where it's a non-discriminating anger, and that's too bad because some people, they're working at, ungodly hours for $49,000 and could be earning a lot of money doing something else.
Because obviously the focus of our conversation today is on these many indictments, as many as 100 or maybe even more. But you're saying, Tom, that don't let that distract you from the fact that there are hardworking and uncorruptible people in New Jersey working for the people there?
Right. One of Chris Christie's chief deputies is a guy named Ralph Marrow, gave me one of the great quotes that I think probably lots of New Jerseyans can identify with. He said, "I take my son into the voting booth and I tell him to vote Democrat, except skip the crooks."
good advice.
Well, one thing, you do get a lot of good quotes from New Jersey. I will say that as much. And that's Tom Moran joining us with George Anastasia talking about New Jersey. And I'm Marty Moscowen, and this is Radio Times.
And thanks so much, Marty. And I hope you guys enjoyed that hour. Wow, that's where all the taxes go in New Jersey. Seriously, folks, we are in day four now of a shortened drive, 7 days here at WHYY for this radio drive. And we're trying to generate a lot of the operating funds to keep us going for the next year. Part of that is, which is going to make a big difference here, is if WHYY can achieve this goal and make this challenge put forth by the Independence Foundation, and that is for 800 people to pledge their support during Radio Times all this week. And, well, here's where we stand. We've heard from more than 50 from yesterday, and so we're trying to make a little progress today. I'm Alan Tu, and with me is Susan Greenbaum. We're senior producers of Radio Times, asking you to help us make this challenge at 1-888-345-9499.
1-888-345-9499. Alan, let me just do a recap here. The Independence Foundation has promised to give WHYY $10,000, and that goes a long way here. If we hear from 800 listeners during Radio Times all of this week, we started yesterday, we have till midday Friday. We've heard from about, I don't know, somewhere over 100.
Okay, so
they've told us we need to hear from about 80 more callers in the next, like, 4 or 5 minutes in order to maintain our goal and reach our goal and keep on track. So it's imperative that we hear from folks just like each and every one of you who are listening. Those of you who listen to Marty day in and day out, this is the time to make your membership go a little bit further because I can't do the math, but $800 to $10,000, that's a lot of money.
Oh, yeah, but you're,
that's
you know,
a lot of money.
Whatever your membership, it goes a little bit further.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And the number to call is 1-888-345-9499, and you can also pledge online like that person just did. Those pledge web pledges also count towards
indeed
helping us meet
do
our goal. 800 is a lofty goal. And you and I were talking about it before,
yeah, it is,
but
it is, it's a big goal.
It's doable.
It's very doable, though. Well, one of the things that always strikes me, Susan, is, you know, 800 is a big goal, but at the same time, think about how many listeners there are of Radio
true.
Times.
That's
and
true.
All we are asking for during this membership drive is for 800 during Radio Times to pledge their support because they listen to Radio Times. That's it, 800, and we will achieve this Independence Foundation Challenge grant of $10,000. 800 people who would pledge during Radio Times. That is all we're asking. Won't you do that right now at 1-888-345-9499.
And again, we have until Friday at noon to meet this goal. One of the advantages of membership in WHYY is, of course, knowing that you've done the right thing by supporting public broadcasting.
Warm,
yeah, you supported public broadcasting in
that
your community. You know, you're part of the community and you've contributed in this meaningful way to make sure that public broadcasting thrives and survives mm-hmm. in the Philadelphia area. One of the advantages of membership also is you get these little invitations every now and then to these events
indeed,
at WHYY. But one of the ones we're looking forward to is we're taking Radio Times on the road this year. We're going to be in Princeton in a couple weeks, and only members are invited to come.
That's
so
right.
In order to get these invitations, you have to be a member. We are going to Princeton. We're going to be going to a couple other places throughout the region in the coming year, and I don't know, if you're interested in seeing what a Radio Times broadcast looks like, you could become a member and get one of these invitations.
It's going to be a lot of fun. We're going to be doing that. We're going to be talking about the 2008 yeah. presidential election in
Princeton. And you know, that Princeton event is already filled
it
with
is.
Like smart members
that's
who,
good to hear.
Who
well,
already
to hear
responded. But we're going to be going to
have
places.
Other ones.
Anyway,
that's
that number to call to become a member is 1-888-345-9499-WHYY.org.
You know, one other thing I wanted
yes,
to mention, and I do think would make a big difference for WHYY, is if you go over to the WHYY website, WHYY.org,
mm-hmm.
you can become a member there. But if you go over to a certain section where you can look up to see if your company is a matching company,
oh, that's a good idea.
A lot of companies in the Philadelphia